This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. How are you doing? I hope you're having a very, very wonderful day. It's me, Jasper William Cartwright. Now, Unati is just finishing up her short rest using some of those hit dice to regain some health, as we all need to do from time to time. So I will be joined today by...
Jeremy Cobb, but Jackson Payne calls me, and I've been sitting on this one for months.
Okay.
Ol' Cobb.
Yes!
The funniest guy at the crib.
Yes!
Yes!
Yes, sir!
Yes!
Yes, sir!
Yes!
Keeping it light. Oh,
love that.
I almost said it one time because I was like, it'll never happen.
It'll never happen.
But I was like, but wait. What if it does?
What if it does? And today it has. So if you at home listening haven't guessed, we actually have a halfling here, a true halfling here with us today, and not only a halfling, a storyboard artist for Big City Greens, a writer on Teen Titans Go, podcaster on What Should We Draw, co-host of Droffy, it's the incredible Caldwell Tanner!
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Hello! Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
That's too many people in the room with
you.
So
many
people. I can see them all cheering and clapping.
I know, we really should.
Get them out of there.
It's like, it's going to be terrible for the audio quality. Shh, keep it down, guys. Please.
Yeah.
Please.
I do fear that I may have started a super spreader event in my bedroom.
I appreciate you taking that risk for me so that there can be a live studio audience for this podcast recording. That's very kind.
You,
that's very nice.
You put that in the email to me. You said you wouldn't come on unless there was a live studio audience.
That is... Yeah. In my rider, yes.
Okay,
cool. I spent thousands of dollars, tens of thousands,
so
ensuring
much.
Not only transportation, but that we could vaccinate
every single
one of these people.
It's really impressive. I really appreciate it. You just get in touch with my agent, and we'll see if we can recoup you some for
amazing,
that.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah. I thank you so much.
Get some coupons for the merch store of NADPOD or something. That'd be great. amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Caldwell. Before we get into it today, we thought this was like the perfect time to make a very exciting announcement, which is partly down to the amazing Caldwell Tanner. We, as of today, I guess, are officially a part of the HeadGum Podcast Network.
The crowd loves it.
Going wild.
They're holding up signs. When do they have time to make signs? No. Amazing.
Literally, they just
found
out.
I had those made as well. Yeah. I had those made and handed
pre-made.
Out to the
Jeremy.
Party.
Pre-made
signs. You'll be receiving expenses for that as well.
Of course. You've gone above and beyond, and I'll do what I can.
But yeah, we are now going to be on the same network as the awesome NADPOD. And after some introductions by Caldwell, so we're very appreciative to Caldwell, and we are so excited to join the HeadGum family. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So stoked.
It's great to have you.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard.
Woohoo! So yeah, that's very exciting. That's our announcement out of the way. Now let's talk about you, Caldwell. That's what the people are here for. That's what people want.
That's right.
It's the only reason they're listening to this episode. Maybe any episodes. They just knew that there was a likelihood that you were going to come on at some point. You know, law of averages.
Eventually.
That is why I listen to podcasts. Cause I just pick a random podcast every week and I'm like, there's a chance that Jennifer Lopez is going to be a guest on this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pick a random celebrity every week and I pick a random podcast. And I just try to like figure it out and see if it's going to work out in my favor. It hasn't yet. Mm-hmm. Has not yet. But you know, you got to keep
put
looking.
A lot of hours into searching podcasts. So we wanted to chat with you, Caldwell, a little bit about you. We always ask an origin story. I guess we could tweak the origin story a little bit because I'd be very interested to hear your origin story as an artist as well. We don't just talk about D&D on this show. We also talk about pop culture. And I'm a massive fan of Teen Titans. So just like how you started out as an artist and then what drew you, I guess, into D&D? Was it like a lateral move? Like, how did that go down?
Of course. I'd be happy to talk about it. So I guess my origin story as an artist, I think it's actually pretty similar to my origin story as like a D&D player and whatnot. It's just kind of a intense desire to replicate the cool things I see.
Cool.
So for art, I remember I was like in the first or second grade. And that was when Sonic the Hedgehog for the Sega Genesis came out.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, you know, when you're a kid and something is like so cool and so foreign to like your existence that it just breaks your brain in a way.
Yeah.
And you can feel like at the time you don't know what it is, but like looking back, you're like, oh, yeah, that just kind of ruined me.
I've definitely been there. Definitely been there.
I lost something to myself to that damn hog, and I never got it back.
can't, he's too fast. No, you can't catch him.
I've got your soul.
That's what the rings are.
Yeah.
Just, he's just collecting souls.
He's searching for the one that's got his
my soul.
Yeah.
And that's why the rings are hollow, is because Sonic doesn't have a soul.
Exactly.
Because he's a fell beast.
And that's why he dies if he gets hit without any rings. Because like he can't keep himself going without those
souls.
To sustain him.
Mm-hmm. Jeez, this is like, there is a Dark Souls Sonic Hedgehog crossover that someone is now dreaming up because of this episode, and I don't think we've done a good thing there. Like,
Hogborn! Fear the old hog.
Wow.
I would play a Hogborn game. Are you kidding me? Dark Souls, but fast?
I've never played a Dark Souls game. I would buy a system so I could
have,
play Hogborn.
I have, and I tell you, I would not. I'm out. I'm checking out already of that game. Like, Dark Souls, no.
But you got to think about it, though, because, like, you're somersaulting all the time in that game. That's just the spin dash attack.
Yeah.
Just, like, bowling over skeletons. It would be a great time.
Yeah.
And Chaos is already kind of like an eldritch being. You know, the big gloopy, isn't his name Chaos? With all the Chaos Emeralds?
From Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, he's already that kind of like an enemy. So I think it could work.
Yeah.
Oh, it could easily work.
Okay, well, we're going to come off this podcast and go get to work on making a video game, guys. So this has been real fun.
Right.
This is the last episode of Three Black
Hedgehogs. Touch from.
Yeah.
First episode of Two Black Hedgehogs and a White Hedgehog.
Oh man, I think we'd get more listeners, honestly.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah, we're onto something.
But yes, I saw Sonic the Hedgehog as a kid. In addition to that, was super into comics. I really loved like newspaper comics, the funnies, as we in the biz call them. From a young age, I started like replicating drawings and art I would see there. Like I just kind of fastidiously like practice drawing Sonic the Hedgehog's head like over and over again. I remember specifically in my second grade class there was like a scrap paper bin. It was like if you wanted to just like some extra paper to like write notes or like to practice your handwriting or something on, you could use that. And I would just like Bogart all the scrap paper so that I could, you know, like practice crafting this Sonic the Hedgehog and just perfecting the form of Sonic. So again, it was early on an experience of seeing something cool, being like, that's so cool. I want to be able to draw something like that. And then just practicing and slowly learning how to draw that way. And then with D&D, it was similar where I like saw people playing it, like listened to podcasts. And I was like, oh, that's so fun. That's so cool. I want to be a part of that. And then Murph asked me after we had been on a podcast called Avid Book Club together, asked me if I wanted to do a D&D podcast. And I was like, yes, please. I've been waiting for this. My ascension has begun. Now I can truly embrace the halfling within. And then, my feet grew two sizes that day and the rest is history.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That was beautiful. That was
the rest is well-documented history. You literally can go listen to it now.
Yeah. I listened to the final episode of 8-Bit Book Club where you guys create like Jake's character on the show. That was so cool. I was like, because I've listened to NADPOD up to that point, and then I went back and listened to that episode, and I was like, whoa, you could literally hear it's all coming together right here.
It's all coming together.
That's amazing.
I do, man, it's very fun hearing people talk about, like, going from NADPOD to 8-Bit Book Club, because it's just like, it's like you went through our house into our backyard, and you just saw all the shit that we had, like, tossed out from the house. She's like, oh, that trampoline is not safe. Please do not jump on that trampoline.
I got tetanus, you will but get I really tetanus. Enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I love that. We do a lot of DM tips and player advice, and I wanted to jump in because I've been binging the hell out of NADPOD, because Jeremy's been telling me for ages I needed to get involved, and I was like, I've listened to too many actual plays already. And then he was just like, just shut up and do it. And so I was like, okay, fine. I felt peer pressured enough to finally start listening to it.
Sat on him and put the earbuds in.
Put the earbuds in, and I've literally not stopped.
You got your audience to sit on him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I hired some people to hold Jasper in place and put the earbuds in.
And I literally haven't stopped listening to NADPOD since. Like, I'm currently listening to it right now. Like, I'm just, you guys are in one ear, this is in the other ear.
There are currently six thugs just holding Jasper.
Yeah, it's incredible. I sound so relaxed. I'm incredibly tense and I want these people to leave my house. we do a lot of tips. And so... I wanted to say to you that I feel so incredibly supported by you, Caldwell, with how chaotic you are in the beginning of NADPOD, because I finally was like, oh, there is someone else like me who just constantly is like, oh, but what about this? You know, and then it just nearly always goes wrong, or there's something that seemed to happen to me all the time, which is where I would get nat 20s to, like, wedgie someone, but it would come to, like, initiative, and I'd get 3 on a rogue, and I'm on for my rogue, and I'd be like, well, what am I supposed to do with this?
Jasper, we both have the scamp's curse, and we just have to embrace that and accept it. You're gonna roll a nat 20 on the stupidest shit imaginable.
Shit possible. Mm-hmm. But when you throw like TNT like down at the mithril and it turns into a dragon, then it's like, oh yeah, that you roll a nat 20 for. Okay, of course. Yeah, okay. My character in our Wagadu campaign, The Coven the Caterpillar, is constantly trying these things, and as a consequence, lost his arms at one point. Like, literally, just had them taken away.
His arms and teeth magically taken away.
Literally magically taken away because of a chaotic decision.
Was this like a punishment? Was this just like, you don't get these anymore?
Yeah, it was a punishment. I now I'm facing going to bird court because I tried to fake an egg and got the wrong egg, and now the bird thinks I had an egg with another bird. It's a whole thing. But it just,
who among
it
us?
Felt very, I felt very
who hasn't
heard.
Been there?
Yeah, I felt very heard by the chaoticness of the beginning. And actually, that was kind of something I wanted to talk to you about, because I thought it's so wonderful to hear you just like live in that chaos. And it works so well for Beverly's character, especially at the beginning. And I just wanted to hear from you, like, what's it like managing that chaos as like a player and as like a DM? Because I guess it's a very different thing when you suddenly have to like, oh, I have to keep the world together now? You know, like, that's a real different, like, you know...
Well, I think early Beverly is certainly a unique firebrand of chaos. And I think it definitely, you can kind of hear as the show goes on and the stakes get a little higher, that like things get a little less chaotic while still managing to be pretty chaotic. And I think like that was like a fun part of like Beverly's journey, was like learning how to like use his chaos for good, I guess, as opposed to just like blasting it out at all times in every direction. But I do think that like you can kind of see like a switch that happens when I start DMing, where like I try to figure out how to like, you know, rein in the chaos and direct it a little more, because I do think that like a D&D campaign needs that chaos. Like, you're literally rolling dice. Like, it's an unpredictable game, and that's the fun of it. So like, you have to keep that in there somehow. But yes, it's true. Like, the big strategy for like maintaining that chaos and like knowing how to like use it and channel it in a campaign is something that I believe you mentioned before, Jasper, which is just like feeling supported. Like, knowing what you can get away with, knowing like what the other players and the DM at your table are going to be into, finding like pushing on that a little bit, like, you know, just like just touching the membrane, seeing how if you can get your hand through, but like kind of doing stuff that you know, like, everyone else is going to be okay with. And also, like, I think if you listen to early NADPOD as well, like, anytime I'm like, this is really dumb, should I do this?
Yeah, everyone's like, yes.
Emily or Jake will be like, absolutely, yes. What are you kidding me? Of course. And, so, like, yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
It's great as well because Murph will just go, fuck no. like, if it's too dumb, you go, no, absolutely not. Moving on. Who's next in the initiative? Like,
and that's important.
Yes.
That is important.
You know what that line is. You know what that line is. It's very clearly drawn in the sand by...
It's like what I've heard. It's like what I've heard about like kid working with children. In that, children really prefer to know where the actual boundaries are. Like once they actually know where the boundaries are, they feel much safer to go completely crazy because they know just how far they can go. Yeah. So it's like the DM becomes a parent in this case,
fully, or a fish spirit that can take away your arms.
Also, you know that
that exactly. And your teeth. Don't forget the teeth.
The teeth
went as well.
The teeth
went as well.
Now, I would never forget the teeth.
And then another spirit comes along and gives you a pair of antelope legs sticking out of your chest.
Yes. Oh yeah, that was also a thing. That was actually a reward. That was a reward. Yes. That one. Surprisingly.
Can you? I got to catch up on Caterpillar and the Cub.
Yeah, it's a wild ride, man. It's a wild ride.
It goes places.
We're only on episode 10.
Can you run on those? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I can cast Expeditious Retreat with those. They actually allow me to cast that at will, which is pretty cool. So,
do they? And you play Moody, right?
Yes. Okay. Cool. Well, knows the stars. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
Do they retract like your wings do?
Spoilers for like the most recent episode. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
No. They released
like bend.
It. Yeah, they kind of.
For most of it, they just sort of bend.
They just bend
up.
In. Yeah.
And so they sort of sit there.
Oh.
Like a pair, like some folded up antelope legs just on his chest.
Yeah.
And then he can extend them to run. So if he wears something like baggy that covers it, you might just think he's got like a weirdly bulky chest.
Yeah.
That rules.
They do have opinions as well. Like I feel like at times they have a real, you know, Jeremy will describe if I sort of say like, oh, should I do this? Like he'll just say the hoofs seem unsure. It's like a good way of Jeremy policing me in my chaotic nature. Just like the hooves
those really aren't sure about this one.
The hooves are like clop clop clop. You know, like,
clop twice for yes, three times for no.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's incredible. I'll give you props for that, Jeremy. That's such a fun way to like, number one, just claim a little bit of DM agency when you need to like guide the character a little bit, but also like what a fun way to like incorporate chaos, as we're talking about, into like a character design and make it not feel like totally incongruous, because like as like a moth person, I guess, or like a person with like moth-like features, like having those like extra limbs, that totally makes sense, and having them fold in like that like it doesn't seem weird to me. It doesn't seem weird. It seems perfect. It seems great.
Yeah, it's so useful. Like I'm a sorcerer with an 11 AC. I need to be able to get away quickly. Like it's really important that I get away quickly.
Absolutely, you know? Imperative that my retreat be expeditious.
Yes, exactly that.
And
exactly
I love the visual of just this poor like skinny dude, fully horizontal, just flopping helplessly in the air while his pair of antelope legs just bound across the savannah. He's just.
Yeah. I'm just along for the ride. Mooty's just along for the ride. Like, well, it actually made me think, though, of one thing that I've come up against in my campaigns. I don't know if either of you two have felt this. Like, there always comes a point where I'm embracing the chaos, and then I suddenly go, oh, this is going to really impact, like, something. They're now going to be able to, like, kill this, you know, person who I need them to not kill, or they're going to find out a piece of information they really shouldn't. You know what I mean? So I do feel like there is a certain point where you do have to kind of go, whoa, boy, you know, and just sort of, you know, throw in a bit of a deus ex something. Do you know what I mean? I think it's good. It's always good to have those like deus ex moments. I literally had to crash a skyship into a woods. Which had planned, but not for a few sessions, but they were getting perilously close to finding something out. And I was like, I'm just going to, let's go with this. Hey, look over here.
That'll do it.
Because I need to save that NPC, because that is like the crux of the campaign. And I really don't want to have to rewrite the whole thing. but yeah, I don't know if either of you have ever felt like you've come perilously close to like nearly ruining a campaign.
Yes, I definitely have. It's usually when it comes to items. I think it's when you give them items and you're like, this will be fine. And then it occurs to you somewhere along the line, like, oh no. Or you put somebody, what happened, I think I've talked about on the show before. I had this really powerful guy show up and try and kidnap one of the party, thinking that they would rebuff him. Either he would succeed or they would rebuff him and he would leave. Instead, one of them who one of the PCs had had their brain eaten by an intellect devourer. And so it was being mind controlled. Ooh. And the intellect devourer saw this new guy and was like, that's a stronger person than the guy I'm in now. And managed to knock out that guy, eat his brain, while the party ransacked him for all of his good items. And he managed to, like, the intellect devourer escaped with the dude's body, but now they had a cubic gate, which allows you to, like, teleport across planes and wherever you want. And they're, like, level 5.
Yowza.
And I was like, oh no!
Please.
So
okay.
I was having to write insanely long sessions just as contingency plans in case they decided to teleport someplace for like the better part of like half an entire, it was like 10 to 15 sessions consecutively where I was just having to write these really long plans until I could come up with a reason for another NPC to be like, hey, you know, you should probably give that to me. It might be dangerous. And the whole time, thankfully, the player forgot they had it for like that long.
Oh no.
So the whole time I'm like,
that's almost worse.
Yeah,
that's
their
almost
fingers worse. Hovering over the button, and I don't know if they're going to press it, and I don't even know if they're going to remember. So it's like, it was brutal.
That's like giving the cast of Friends a spaceship. It's just like, they could go to the moon if they wanted to, but like, are they going to just go to their jobs and hang out in the coffee shop, or are they going to go to the moon? They could go to the moon at any time. This is terrifying.
Yeah.
Caldwell, I actually wanted to mention, speaking of harnessing chaos, in the Trinivale campaign, I was really fascinated by the way that you would like incorporate the jokes and stuff that people would come up with and just be like, cool, this is part of the campaign now. I created actual mechanics now. Your Trinstagram will now officially like affect the way your character goes, or you now have like you're a jam ranger now. Or like, the BBs of the parasites, all of these are like completely disjointed spoilers for the Trinivale campaign.
Oh yes, yeah. So I guess if you're spoilers for the Trinivale campaign, but I think this was my first time DMing was running the Trinivale campaign. So, and you can kind of like, if you listen through, you can see me kind of gaining a little more confidence as a DM as it goes on. I think like one of the big things I wanted to try out was like, okay, how can I like give the characters items that feel like significant to them and like give them power, but also, you know, are like personal and kind of give them more agency over the world. So like with Onyx, like she kind of joked a lot about like becoming like a social media influencer. So I was just like, okay, well, like what if that's like where your power comes from? Like what if like you are trying to get away from this like sorceress pact you've made and you want to like find a different source of power? So like I invented this like Trinstagram mechanic where like she could basically cast spells and like use magic unpredictably via like social media. And then for Nyack, who is Jake's character, he kept just randomly slipping in jam. We made like one joke about it in the second episode. Like he would just make like a bad dexterity roll, which is strange for him because he was a ranger. So his dexterity should have been good. But like for whatever reason, he was just like really unlucky around jam. So I, for reasons unknown still to this day, made an entire subclass for him called the Jampian Ranger, which is just a very sticky ranger. I think that one came out of the fact that like we were using the original 5e ranger rules, and they're good for like a campaign where you're dealing with like terrain and hunting a lot, but for like an episodic kind of like one-shot vibe campaign where every new episode feels distinct, there wasn't a lot for him to use, so I kind of like wanted to beef him up. That actually loops around beautifully, Jeremy, to the story you were telling before, because I gave him all of these subclass features, and I believe one of them that I gave him was he could try and like get the enemy prone. And if he failed, he could use a jam point, which is essentially like a key point for rangers. He could use a jam point to like make it automatically succeed.
Whoa.
Which I didn't think about at the time. It meant that he could overrule legendary resistances, essentially. So yeah. There would be times when, like, Nyack, who started out as, like, one of the weakest characters, could just, like, pin down a legendary boss in Sticky Jam, which, you know, like, sometimes you bite your own ass. And you know what?
And it tastes like
jam. Honestly, I think that is like a rite of passage for a DM, because there is always a moment as a DM who likes, anyone who likes homebrewing, I feel like, has had this experience where they go, man, why haven't Wizards of the Coast thought of this? They have, it's just broken and dumb. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why that doesn't exist. But trust me, someone along the line has thought of that exact feature and actively chose not to put it in. But you know what? It's a part of the, like, you've got to go through that, right? Like, you've got to go through the moment of being like, oh, shit.
You need to have the rubber banding of being, I'm a genius.
Yes.
I'm an absolute fool.
Yeah, yeah. And the watermelon explodes. Like, when you put the last rubber band on and you're like, oh, I've ruined my campaign.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think I had a moment like that for each of the characters in Trinaville, which is very fun. Like, Jake's was with Nyack's ability to overturn legendary resistances. Onyx, I think this was just like Emily being a very good D&D player, but like I gave them basically like 2 days to prepare for like this final battle that was happening. And Emily was like, okay, cool. I make a full simulacrum of myself. The spell takes 48 hours. You've given me just enough time. Now we have an extra party member for this final battle.
Yep. Snap.
Which, yep, you got to be careful about how much time you give your players.
Yeah, gonna rush
especially
those decisions.
When Emily Axford is playing.
Yeah.
Can we just talk for a moment about how good of a player Emily Axford is?
It is ridiculous. Anytime. Like, as well, because she hides it so well in, like, her players, like her characters, like, you know, when she does Moonshine at the beginning, and obviously I can only speak for that and... I've watched some Fantasy High as well, but like, she's like, oh yeah, like Moonshine just kind of does this because she happens to like fall over and just do this spell, and it always works out to be so ridiculously effective. Like, so ridiculously effective. I think it was the...
Yeah.
Was it the... It was the... I've just listened to the part where you guys fought the four elements, and Emily's like, oh yeah, just before we get into combat, I just cast these two support spells, and like, one of them, I think, gave Hard One like, advantage on... It was something like advantage on attacks or something, and it was just broken because Hard One ended up doing like 40 points of damage a round after that. It was so crazy. And again, it was just such a like throwaway, like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna do this thing. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Murph. Don't worry about it. It's cool.
Yeah. She's always really good at like building that into her character too. Mm. It never feels like disjointed with like what her character is doing or what her character wants. She's very good at like
it never feels meta-gamey.
Making a character.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's never. Well, I guess what would the opposite of metagaming be? It's just like macro gaming.
Yeah,
macro gaming.
Yeah, like I wish there was more things I could say, but they're all spoilers. Like, but there's so many moments where it's just like,
definitely.
Wow. At one point, she did something that was such a good move that I pitched it to my own druid player. Thankfully, I was able to do it in such a way that she thought it was her own idea. But like, it was such a good idea. I was like, I would be remiss if I did not pass this on to this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes Emily will make a move so good, you gotta like take a lap. You gotta just like stand up from the table and be like, wow.
Yeah.
Goddamn, that's great.
I really feel like at the beginning of NADPOD, like, you and Jake would have been rolling several new characters if it wasn't for Emily being there, like...
Oh, absolutely.
It actually goes to show, like, there's, like, the one time that you guys split up, like, Hard One very nearly just straight dies. Like, so close.
Was that when he fights the Bullywug, like, one-on-one?
He runs off in the... Well, he goes down in that exact instance as well, and then is saved by an NPC, but he also runs off onto the ship. Like him and Cobb just run off and just get absolutely destroyed by the people on the ship.
Oh yeah.
No, these are all very recent memories for me, guys. I've just been listening to this. I don't know if you could tell.
No, that's great. It's like very fun. I don't know, like, because we're making the show and just continue to make it, it's always fun to remember, like, oh yeah, there's just like 100 episodes, like crystallized in amber for people to enjoy and discover. So like, it always tickles my heart to hear that people are like just now finding the show or just now listening. So like, yeah, this is great. It's like you're telling me about a past life that I lived, but I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, if you're a fan of that, then make sure you stick around until the end of the episode. Where we're going to be doing a little fun segment, or a bit of a fun segment with Jeremy and Caldwell here, which is going to be looking back on some early NADPod. I'm very excited. It's going to be very fun.
I'm very excited for people to see how bad my memory is.
And how good Jeremy's memory is. Like, it is encyclopedic. It's crazy.
We'll see.
I've picked that up now. And so.
A lot of NADPod in between now and early 2019.
Yeah.
Like, some things have happened, it's true.
Yeah. Some things have changed. Actually, Jeremy, you had a question about fan art. Is that right?
Yeah. This was an interesting trend because I was looking up, you know, this was a while ago. I think I was just looking at pictures of the characters, the original Band of Boobs. And I noticed that a lot of the fan art depicts Beverly as having like brown skin. And I was like, was he described as that? And then I don't think you were described in that way, but it was a really interesting thing because I don't normally see that with characters, essentially people just deciding the race, which I thought was really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. I guess my question would be, have you noticed that trend in the fan art as well? And yeah, how do you feel about that as the guy who plays the character or played the character?
So I guess like I have definitely noticed it. And it's awesome. It's like really cool seeing kind of like the collective conscious or unconscious rather like decide on something like that and kind of glom onto an idea and like evolve it. Because like I think, you know, I fully believe in statutes of limitations and like, you know, characters like returning to the public domain and things like that. So like I do know that like to an extent, like we're only borrowing these characters in some ways, like we're creating them, but like they're living full time in other people's heads. And that's awesome. That's like so flattering. So yeah, I think that like you kind of have to go with like what the audience, the direction they take it a little bit. It was definitely like a little I don't want to say uncomfortable, but it was definitely like strange for me where it's just like, huh, like this isn't what I thought, but I'm like glad that they're taking this direction. But also like, I don't want to like seem like I'm presenting Beverly in that way. Like, cause that's not an experience I have. That's not like something I can fully bring to the table as like, you know, presenting someone as like, you know, playing a darker skinned character. That's like not an experience I have or nor something I would want to like try to perform as. So it was definitely like a weird mental space, but, I don't know, I guess like I just tried to stay, sincere to who Beverly was, and like, just let that influence the audience. And like, hopefully I did okay. I guess that's the real lesson here is like, I'm just trying to do my best, and if I fucked up, just let me know.
I thought it was great, man. I loved it. I just thought it was like a really cool thing because I hadn't thought of him that way either. But when I started to see the fan art, it was like, oh, that's a really cool way. I guess, yeah, why not? Like, no one else.
Hell yeah, why not?
There's like no racial coding in any of the shows, so anybody can look like anything. It was really cool.
And that is also something we like try to do. I can say like me specifically, and I think the other players as well, like try to, when describing the characters, like describe some details, but like leave things a little nebulous so that like players or the audience can like fill in the gaps a little bit, which I think is like, I think it's good because, you know, like you don't want things to be too concrete for an audio show. Like you want people, at least like I enjoy that aspect of when I listen to a podcast, being able to kind of like visualize like how things look in my own way. Like, you know, normally in my head, it's like, very anime and stupid, but like some people it might be, you know, like a nice like live action CW drama. So like it gives them the tools that they need to like visualize their own adventure.
Is that why you use they them pronouns for pretty much all the NPCs in Trinivale?
That's a good question. That is another thing where it's just like I can't take any credit for like being super like forward thinking or progressive. That was mostly me being flustered when trying to come up with NPCs. Initially, that's what it was. I would have like a room of like four guards that were attacking the players. And I like hadn't come up with anything beyond just the fact that they're a guard. So I would just use like they, them, and then let the players kind of decide, you know, further aspects of them. So I kind of like, and that might be, if you're like a new DM, that is kind of a helpful tip, is just to like let the players decide things that you don't know. If it's not important, just like let them fill in the blanks there. But I don't know, continuing on my personal journey through DMing, I think I realized this is like something people are responding to. This is like something I hadn't thought enough about, but it's like, that's good. Yes. And like, this should reflect the natural world almost like reflect it, even like refract it and like, you know, focus it a little more, because that's the power of fantasy. I started like including it a little more frequently and like kind of defaulting to it, just like both as a tool for the players to fill in story details, but also just as a way to like highlight, you know, that there are, you know, different, that the gender is fluid and there's like a spectrum of it. So, and I thought that was important. And eventually, like, one of the bigger characters did end up like being actually non-binary. And that was like just kind of a fun little accident that came about just by trying to evolve and grow as I played. And I think that like D&D can be very good for that. It can be very good for like self-reflection and like trying to expand your personal, you know, just thoughts and preferences and understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
It's actually really funny about the, just going back to the comment about the way people see things and almost like enjoying people kind of claiming that almost like imaginary space for themselves. It really reminds me of when I was a kid. Unless like race was specifically mentioned, like I think in my head, like Harry Potter was always black, because in my head I would read a book and I would want to imagine myself in that situation. Do you know what I mean? And so if there's always been a particular character that I've been drawn to, I would then basically almost imagine that character then looking like me or being very similar to me, at least, you know, or having more in common with me than just say a white person. So I wonder whether, you know, and I think ultimately that's testament to storytelling as well. Like, I don't think that's just down to, you know, because I think there are some stories which you'd find it harder to do than others. And so, like, I think, if anything, it's a compliment to the way you guys play that game that the fans feel free enough. Do you know what I mean? And feel like they have an ownership over the thing that you've created, which I think all fans should do. And I'd hope that fans would do the same with this show, to dream into the world and to dream into this thing and hell yeah, see yourself as, you know, Beverly or Moonshine or whoever it is. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a really lovely thing. A really, really lovely thing.
Fully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a fun dance. It's like a fun kind of like two-step to do with the audience. Just like that find that like mental cohesion where like everything is reflective in that way. I had a similar experience with Sonic where like I pictured my face on Tails' body and I would be flying
Tails
behind
too.
Sonic.
I was so Tails awesome. Too.
Wait, really?
Yeah, genuinely, I love Tails so much. I remember...
Fuck, I love Tails.
It's so funny. I went through this full thing as a kid where I would go like, man, I kind of wish I was a Knuckles, but I'm not. I'm Tails. Like, that was genuinely what I used to tell myself as a kid, because Knuckles was like the coolest one. I could hit the hardest, but I was like, nah, I'm Tails, man. I can fly.
I'm not. No. I couldn't pull off that look.
Yeah, that was literally... I can't do... I don't look good in red. Orange is my color.
I think, like, I mean, God, I don't know enough about child psychology, but I think that's like an important step for a kid to like acknowledge which Sonic character they are.
Yeah, fully.
For me, I wouldn't imagine myself as any of the specific characters. I'd imagine myself as just another animal person in that world.
Oh, wow.
So I think we're separating the Sonic fandom right now. That I'm the one who starts posting like weird OC, please do not steal.
but Jeremy, like, which animal were you?
I think I wanted to be a hedgehog, because I used to also read, it was either a hedgehog or a rabbit. There was a comic. I think it kind of got published a little bit in the US, but it was primarily a UK comic called Sonic the Comic. And there's
the Archie comics. Yeah.
No. This is different from the Archie comics.
Oh, okay.
This is like, they have a character named like, there was a dude named Porker Lewis, who's like a pig. There was a rabbit named Johnny Lightfoot. Mm-hmm. There was a squirrel named Shorty the Cybernick, who got permanently encased in like cybernetic armor and was like this really dark character.
Oh, wow.
Who it was like, it was really different, but I think it was primarily UK based. And I think I really, really liked Johnny Lightfoot. And then I also in that one, Supersonic is like full on the Hulk. It's not like when Sonic gets exposed to the energy, he goes like berserk.
and turns into Supersonic and starts destroying everything.
Whoa.
And then they get separated and they're trying to like fight Supersonic because he's this horrible monster. So I think I thought of myself, depending on how I was feeling, either as a rabbit person or as a hedgehog.
You were just the person being like, snap out of it, Sonic.
Yeah. I'd be like, Sonic can't stop Supersonic today. Guess it's going to have to be me. Running in.
Whereas me and Cobra are like, we'll do whatever we can to help you.
Oh, shit. Yeah, guess it's got to be Harami.
The rabbit. Yeah. We'll help you out, Harami.
It's very cool to know that that's where the like Porker Lewis character comes from. Cause like we read this adventure game book for 8-Bit Book Club forever ago. It was like this like choose your own adventure book with Sonic characters. And Porker Lewis and Johnny Lightfoot are in that. And we're like, who are these characters? We've never heard of these. So I guess it's using the UK comics canon for those characters. I love it. It's fun to know that there's this like entire other like secret Sonic canon that I only know a little bit about.
Yeah.
Where apparently you are a rabbit.
Exactly. I didn't even know there was a, I hadn't listened to that. I have to listen to that episode of 8-Bit Book Club now. That's legitimately really cool.
We do this series called Metal City, which is this like adventure game book where you have to like, it's an RPG kind of where you have to like roll stats for Sonic at the beginning. And then like you have like choices you can make, but you can only do some choices if you have a high enough stat. And it is a nightmare. It is so hard because it's a book written for children. So it's not like airtight. It does not have the Wizards of the Coast seal of approval on it. So you will just like find yourself repeatedly like getting trapped in a jail by Robotnik or like drowning in hot lava. And it's just like, it's pretty gruesome too, honestly.
Like, yeah, when you think about that, when you boil down to it, like drowning in hot lava is an awful way to die. Like,
yeah. Cause like for whatever reason, you're lasting long enough that your body isn't burning up.
Mm.
Like the magma is entering your lungs, and asphyxiating you before you even have a chance to burn. I guess maybe Sonic like had an extra ring or something, so is like he's lasting longer, long enough for like the magma to enter his lungs. And this is all in the book. This is all in there. They go into graphic detail about that.
Graphic detail.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You see your fur catch on fire every little bit.
Oh, man.
I shouldn't have grabbed those rings.
I wish I could die more quickly.
The ring pops out, but he lands on top of it, and it's trapped in between him and the lava, and he's like, oh, no.
No.
The worst case scenario.
I must have rolled a one. that is actually amazing. We would be remiss on this show. We've kind of touched on it a little bit, but obviously one of the main topics we talk about a lot on the show is diversity and inclusion. And I wanted to talk to you again. I just thought it'd be really awesome to get a bit of a unique point of view, as we've had a lot of like sort of TTRPG and D&D based people on the show, but to actually talk about your experience within arts as well, because it's all a part of the, you know, the pop culture world. I think it all feeds into the same pot, if you will. They all influence each other. So just like, how have you found, because obviously I guess you do a lot of, when you're drawing animated, you know, cartoons and things, you have people with green skin and you have people with, so I'd be interested to know how like race coding and things like that plays a part in when you're developing a show. Or does it not?
Sure.
Because you have green characters. So you sort of, it's less of a binary, this is this and this is that sort of thing.
So I can speak a little bit to this, but I can't like speak with like full authority because I was just like a board artist specifically on Big City Greens. But, you know, as I mentioned with like DMing and playing D&D, it's all I kind of treat it like I'm just trying to soak up as much knowledge as I can and expand as best to my ability. Mm. Like an inclusive SpongeBob is how I picture myself.
Inclusive SpongeBob.
but I specifically remember, I can tell a little story about, when I was working on Big City Greens. It was something that like has stuck with me a little bit, was that, I went into, the showrunner, Chris and Shane's office one day, cause I was talking with him about a story. And, I noticed that, Chris had like a little post-it note, on his desk, and it feels stupid to even have to have a post-it note, but it's like the sort of thing where like people like me, especially, I think just need to like constantly drill it into themselves. Mm. And it was just like a note that was just like, hey, remember, like when you're doing a crowd shot, 50-50, make sure that it is like equal women and men in the crowd. Mm. Like make sure that everything is like equal and inclusive at every moment, like double check, just kind of go back through and like make sure that you're not excluding anyone when you have the opportunity to do that. Mm. And it's just like, I don't know. I think that it's something that a lot of people in animation do. And it's like very easy, like when you are drawing on a deadline, to like let your biases take over. So it's something, and again, I will reiterate that I am not perfect in this regard at all, and like still learning and working on it, but like that note struck me, and it was like something I tried to internalize, which is just like, do another pass always if you have time. Mm-hmm. Make time, do another pass to just try and be inclusive in that way. And I guess Big City Greens is interesting because we do have like a colorful cast of characters, but there is definitely like, it's weird, and it's not like perfect because like there's characters who are just like straight up black, like Remy, Cricket's friend in the show, is just like, yeah, like he's black. And I think that was like a conscious choice to be like, everyone's colorful, but like we understand that it's important to have like actual characters who are like, you know,
yeah, coded as black, yeah.
Not even coded, just like straight up, you know, like this is a black character. And I think that's important. But yeah, I think like it was something that we thought about, and it's something that I think like animation is definitely getting better about, but like that's my personal experience with it, and I can't speak too much more to like the industry at large, but that was just a little anecdote that stuck with
me. Yeah, I really like that actually, because I think that and again it loops back perfectly to D&D, that when you are in a place of like hitting a deadline or moving moving quickly through something or making something up on the fly, it is super easy to let those biases take over, and it is super easy to then like look back and be like, yeah, that probably wasn't the best choice. And I think that at the moment when you're, and I think when whether you're doing anything creative, I think there's a certain level of responsibility that you have to people to be as, you know, unbiased as possible, to try and make that work as accessible to everyone as possible. And I think that, yeah, I really like that point of like, yeah, you do have to identify your bias. And I think identifying that you have bias, you know, like it feels a bit icky to kind of admit, but like definitely, yeah. Like I know for a fact that most of the NPCs in my campaigns are generally female, like or at least all the ones in power, and I've just, that is something that is definitely a bias. I've just decided at some point in my life that, like, you know, and it's probably an influence of like having two mums, and so I'm like, oh yeah, all the women are the ones in power, that's great. But I'm also like, okay, I could probably like add some, you know, nuance to this. I could probably, do you know what I mean?
The mayor could be a guy.
Yeah, like, so yeah, someone.
You hear that, kids?
Yeah, you could be a mayor one day if you want. little white man? No, like it's just, you know, it's just quite funny, I think, and it's like, you know, like you said, like it's a difficult thing, and I think that you've nailed it there, and like you should never feel bad for acknowledging your biases. I think that like it's only bad if you acknowledge your biases and then don't actively try and, you know, maneuver within them. Yeah. You know, that's where it becomes bad for me. But I don't, like, for me, having that post-it note on the desk, like 100%, like, yeah, of course you should. So yeah, definitely. I really like that. I really like that, man. That's an awesome point.
On that topic, in a game that I'm running, it's like set in like a huge metropolitan city. For much the same reason as you, Caldwell, I had not picked the races for some of the NPCs who were going to show up. And I was like, you know what? Why don't, like, they were like, what race is this person? I was like, why don't you decide? Roll me a die and we'll decide like which one on I'll just pull up a list. And players enjoyed it so much that I've made a full color coded chart. And now like every time a new NPC comes up, if there's no reason for me to have like assigned them a specific race, I'll ask the players like, hey, somebody roll me a quick D10 and a D4 and we'll figure out what rate. And it's completely gotten rid of any biases I've had in terms of like, oh, they all have to be elves and dwarves. Now it's like, oh, yeah, okay, there's a Loxodon. Cool. I'm joining this. Yeah.
There's always that part of your brain, right, that's still addled by J.R.R. Tolkien, where any new NPC, yeah, you're like, dwarf, no, human, no, something else, just come on, like, think of the drow, damn it, that's not really what I was going for. Like, I feel like you really want to circumvent that now.
and like, players love that shit. Mm. That is player food is what that is. Mm. Is when you give them like just like even more agency over the world. It's like a little treat from daddy, and I think they all really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Is getting to like, you know, make the story theirs as well. So that's great. Yeah, and it's no fun when the DM is like, no, this must be an elf. You see, for the conflict has existed for centuries. Now I shall give you some lore. I do want to really quickly shout out, if I can, my old board partner on Big City Greens, Kiana Consmith. You can find her online at Kiana My Art, MAI. She is incredible. And like, I think a lot of the, you know, again, like talking about just like learning and growing, like she helped me out a ton when we were working on the show together. There's a specific moment that I always think back to where we were like coming up with a like rival character for the mom on the show. And in the outline, it was written as like a male character called Skids, who was like this like biker guy. And then Kiana like turned to me while we were like sketching up stuff for the episode and was like, what if this was like a cool lady? And it was just like one of those great moments where it's just like, this should be a cool lady. Yeah. Like cool lady villain. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Why did we not see this before? Like, and then just it kind of clicked into place. And I don't know. It was one of those like great early moments where I was like examining a bias, and Kiana was very helpful for that. So
amazing.
Shout out to her. She rules. Her art is awesome.
We'll make Kiana our friend of a took. That's awesome. We like to just shout out people in the community and if they do good work. So yeah, friend of a took. And we'll put a link to their like socials or something in the description for you, so you can easily find them. I think that would be great. Thanks for that, man.
Yeah, if you like animation and Pokemon, it's a good follow for you.
I'm a big
rules.
Fan, and I've just watched the new trailer for Pokemon Legacy, I think it's called, and I'm already thinking about buying a Switch now because of it.
What's so, Pokemon Legacy?
Oh, it's like a full open world RPG Pokemon. It's finally doing it. They're finally doing it, man. They're finally doing
it.
Jeremy's mind is being blown currently. It's happening. It's happening.
This is momentous.
Yeah, it's a very big deal. I was like, I saw it, I was like, oh my God. It's finally here. Because I was a huge fan of the GameCube. I can't remember what they're called. They were a GameCube.
Colosseum?
Yes, I think so. And all the basically you could only catch like the shadowy Pokemon and make them.
Oh, Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness is what you're referring to.
Yes. And so you could only catch these very specific Pokemon. And I remember I was obsessed with this game. But I was just sat there like, why can't I just go out and catch a normal Pokemon? But then it had like quite a nice message. It was kind of like, no, we only kind of indenture servitude upon the ones that have had some sort of like issues. Like the rest of them are
it's
just like okay. It's basically basically what you're doing is rehabilitation. Like the rest of them are just okay, like out there living their life and being happy. It's these bad people that are making them shadowy and gross, and so therefore you can cure them and then kind of keep them. Like it was a weird logic, but I was like, as a kid, I'm doing a good thing.
Did you guys ever read the Pokemon Adventures manga?
I don't think I did.
I vaguely know of it, but I haven't ever fully read it. But I know that it's wild, is what I know.
It's really violent.
Oh, God,
like,
really?
Really? Yeah. Gary's Charmeleon fully kills an Arbok. Chops it in half. Just right in half.
No.
At one point.
Gary.
Yeah. Well, they call them. It's like a direct adaptation of the games. So it's actually, I think, blue in this version. But Red, a.k.a. Ash, at one point gets captured by like a bunch of Weepin' Bells, Bell Sprouts, and Victory Bells. And like along with a bunch of other small furry Pokemon. And they start to like drain the Pokemon to as an evolution ceremony for the Bell Sprouts. That they like stick vines into. You see all these like Rattata being just drained of their fluids as these Bell Sprouts are evolving into Weepin' Bells.
That energy's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. And I mean, in the games, they do the descriptions. They'll talk about Pokemon eating each other, but it's the first time I've ever seen it actually depicted in something.
That is something I fully blocked out as a child. If it says that they eat each other anywhere in that game, I did not notice it. Not once.
Yeah.
That is the first time I've heard of it, and I'm upset that I've...
They try to like clean up their trails a little bit, but they definitely still acknowledge it in like the newer games. I think that specifically like in Sword and Shield, maybe you can get like a like Slowpoke tail on a stick, but they like write it off by being like, "Oh, the tail regenerates," but you can eat it.
Ooh,
yeah, and in Gold and Silver, a bunch of Slowpokes get their tails cut off, and a guy tries to sell you some.
Yeah,
jeez.
And you find the Slowpokes just hanging out with their tails missing.
It's true. And I guess like what the worst part about all this is, I would eat one. I would absolutely eat one.
Yeah. You come at me. I'll buy one. I want to see what it
if
tastes like.
If
what
do you think
it's
good enough like? For Shellder, I'd try it.
I feel like it tastes like marshmallow or something. Like I feel like that's what Slowpoke looks like to me, like a very kind of gooey sort of consistency. And I feel like Pokemon would be different. Like I don't think they would be like sinewy, you know, and like meaty.
No.
I feel like they would be
maybe be more like an octopus. Like you know what? But octopus is like a savory marshmallow.
Yeah.
So like I think that I think that that is what I hope and dream that a Slowpoke tail tastes like. Until Nintendo announces that I can eat Slowpoke, I will continue to be their harshest critic.
Yeah, and so you should be. I remember, this actually really reminds me of the day I realized that Cubone wears the skull of their mum. I was like, oh boy.
They were poaching into the games.
That's deep. That's so deep. Like, I just got over Bambi, and then it was like, Cubone, bam. I was like, oh, God, no.
Back at it.
Back
and
at it again.
It's all of the Cubones.
Yeah, every single Cubone.
Orphaned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it like an energy transfer thing? Is that what's going on there?
Do you guys hear the theory that Cubone is actually the baby Kangaskhan?
Oh, Kangaskhans, yeah. I did see that, yeah.
It's like, because the idea is the Cubone looks kind of like an intermediate form between the baby Kangaskhan and adult Kangaskhan. And it is mentioned as far back as Gen 1 that Kangaskhan are often poached. So like they're very endangered. So some people, that's like a fan theory that the Cubone is essentially a slightly grown up baby Kangaskhan who then, because it takes on the skull of the mom, evolves into a Marowak instead of a Kangaskhan.
Yeah.
I love like theories that are derived from hidden sprites and like hacks of like hidden data like that.
Yeah.
I love anytime that like there's like a trove of information. It was like when that like big Nintendo hack happened and they like revealed like the primordial Yoshis, like the secret Yoshis you were never meant to see.
Oh, God.
And they just looked like you got to look it up. There's like a Yoshi that looks like a weird lizard and it just is wrong. And it kind of like you look at it and it feels like you've transferred over into another timeline or dimension because you see this wrong Yoshi. And it just like that makes my brain tingle whenever I see something like that.
Yeah.
And it's great, especially for a company like Nintendo that's like very good at like keeping their secrets. Anytime like a little like trickle of like wrong data comes out, it really gets to me.
That's amazing.
So yeah.
That's so amazing.
Absolutely.
So Caldwell, we always do a thing with our guests where we get them to share a tale from the table. So a tale from the table is something that is super chaotic, crazy, wacky, whatever it is. I could tell by your reaction that you were like, aha, yes, I am ready for this. generally the more crazy and chaotic, the better. And it can be something from NADPOD or another sort of like live show, or it can be absolutely something from a home game that maybe no one has known before.
Oh, boy. So this is actually great. The first time in a while, I did get to DM a home game. My buddy, Ben, had a birthday, and I was like, shit, I don't know what to get you for your birthday. Oh, I know. I'll just spend 10 hours prepping something. and so I did like a little one shot for him and some of our friends for his birthday. And it was super fun. It was like my first time DMing since Trinavale, and it was like really good to get back into it. I had the experience I'm sure you both have anytime you like try to prep just a little one shot for your friends.
Yeah.
Is where like about like the second hour of prepping, you're like, okay, well, I guess I need to figure out like the cosmology of this world. Yeah. And then, you know, we're going to need to like figure out like what the other city states are within this kingdom.
What pantheon am I going for? Because I could go with like a more of a traditional Norse pantheon, but then like some of that Greek pantheon could be really useful for this particular storyline that I might go to if they go to that temple. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fully there.
Yeah. And it's a one shot, but like I should probably build in like a little tease for if they want to do another adventure.
A little cliffhanger.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was me. But I put together this little like one shot adventure. It was like supposed to be really like light and cheesy, whereas like the characters were going on a retreat to like this mountain weekend. Essentially, they were like looking for like this mythical Airbnb in the mountains where it was like only for like the most virtuous and brave of heroes. So like they were searching for that, and I had like set up this little tavern with like lots of like NPCs in it for them to explore and like talk to and like find information about where this cabin is. And they talked to one NPC and then decided, we want to get sandwiches. I was like, okay, all right, cool. So you talked to the one park ranger, you got a little information, did not talk to the kobold that would have given you a letter with clues about how to get to the cabin. Ooh. Rad, cool. So we're going to eat sandwiches. So they like went across the street to this diner called Tootsie's that I made up on the fly. And they were like asking about the specials, and they specifically asked like, is there like a special, is there like an all you can eat challenge or something like that? And I was like, yeah, there is. It's called the Hexagonal Challenge, and you have to eat 6 Subway sandwiches arranged in a hexagon. And if you do that, then your meal is free. So like the first, I think like hour of our session was just them like doing this like all you can eat challenge where I on the fly made up like the rules where you have to eat the sandwich. Like the DC Constitution save starts at 10 and then it goes up by a D4 every time. And it turned out to be like an amazing little cohesion game for these players who had never played together, because like my wife Susanna was playing a barbarian named Linda who like was the one eating the sandwiches because she had like the highest constitution. But then Ben was playing a cleric, and when it looked like Linda was about to like fail her con save, he cast Bless on her to give her like a little extra constitution, and it like she managed to like house the sandwich with no problem. And like eventually it was 6 sandwiches, so like the DC got pretty steep, and these were like level 3 characters, so they was like up to like 22 or 23. Oof. Which is like doable, but like very barely doable.
Yeah, likely, yeah.
But like she managed to get the sandwich down, and so like they had to like this fun little like interlude where they ate sandwiches, and then as a reward, Tootsie gave them like 6 magical sandwiches, and it was like, I guess they're just healing potions. Like I've disguised the sandwiches. I don't know. I'll figure it out later. But then eventually they actually get back on track and like head up the mountain, and they arrive at this little like valley at the top of the mountain that like connects like a smaller mountain and a higher mountain, and they have this encounter with an owlbear, and they notice that the owlbear is acting a little strange. It's acting like a little too ferocious, and they stop wanting to attack it because they're like, no, something's wrong with this owlbear. This isn't normal. It's acting strange. And of course, I was like, it's just a fucking owlbear. I don't know.
And then eventually
they were like, all right, is there anything I can do to like attack it non-lethally? And I was like, it's hungry. It's almost out of life. Mm-hmm. You feed it the sandwiches. You notice that the sandwiches have a holy glimmer to them. And as the owlbear eats the sandwiches, you see radiant light pouring out of them. And then this like blood parasite erupts from the owlbear, and the owlbear is saved and like scampers off into the woods. So, and it turned out, like, the villain they were facing at the end was this, like, kind of blood parasite thing. So it like, turned out to be a great chance to, like, weave that in a little earlier, but... What I'm saying, I guess, is always take time for sandwiches.
Always take time for sandwiches. Wow. Yeah,
that was amazing.
Next cup in the Caterpillar, yeah. Jeremy, me and Ngenagama, we're going to get sandwiches. We might need them later. We might need them later.
A whole the sandwich session. It becomes a regular thing.
It's at the end of it,
we spend a whole session just eating sandwiches.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a short rest, but then you also need a lunch break.
Yes.
Like, you need so many different types of breaks built into your D&D session.
But elves only need a 15-minute lunch break as opposed to a half-an-hour lunch break. So, you know, it's one of the another optional class feature. That is amazing. Thanks for sharing. So, I have something, a little fun thing planned.
Ooh. So I found this clip of Jeremy from episode 4 of Three Black Halflings. Take a listen.
Yeah!
Episode 4.
Shout out to the core four!
Yeah.
And actually, a retroactive shout out to the two crew. And the three Cree.
We're gonna try and move on with the episode now, Jeremy, if that's okay.
Yeah, sorry. I just, in case anyone who listens to NADPOD or is on NADPOD ever listens to this, I want them to know that I love their show and them.
So I thought we could have ourselves a little quiz off. Who knows NADPOD better? But what I thought would be really fun is we'll give everyone a little sneak preview of this, and then if they want to catch the end and find out who wins, they can head over to our Patreon. But this is going to be a little game called Luck of the Halflings, or until we get a better name and someone comes up with it. But that's what I've sort of come up with so far.
I love it. Perfect. Don't change a thing. Yeah.
And so the idea is, this was a game, a brainchild of mine developed because I wanted to actually have a chance of beating Jeremy in a quiz game. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of most topics, and therefore it makes it very difficult to actually... I can't recall things for shit. Like, I am terrible. So I thought, why don't we do as we do on the show and introduce an element of complete chaos and luck? The way the game will work is there is a easy question, which is usually ridiculously easy. There is a hard question, which is absolutely absurdly hard. And there is a medium question, which is like a good, just like normal standard quiz question. So you get 1 point for an easy question, 2 points for a medium question, and 3 points for a hard question. But here's the thing is you don't know which question you're going to get because you get to randomly pick a door. So you will be picking a door to decide which question you get. And also, I will be giving out bonus points if someone makes up a guess because they have no idea and it makes me laugh. I'll give you a bonus point because it's chaos and great. I can do that because I'm the game master or whatever.
Jasper, this rules. If you had gone on to explain like 5 more rules for how this game worked, I would have been totally for it. So you open the door, and through the door are 3 orbs, and you must collect the orbs in the correct order to answer the question.
How do you already know what's in round 2? How did you already know? Like, I'm so sorry. Did you read my notes? Did I send you my notes by accident?
You shared them with me. I don't know why you did that.
I don't know why I did that either. Damn. And then for a very few questions, there is also the possibility that I will reduce the point tally by 1, and you can have multiple choice if you're really, really stuck. So there you go. Ooh. So you got a hard 3-pointer. Maybe I can give you some multiple choice. Who knows? But yes,
very kind.
This is going to be Luck of the Halfling. As you are our guest, Caldwell, we will not make you roll initiative, but you will get to pick a door first. So, Caldwell Tanner, you enter a dark cave, and before you, you see 3 pathways extending out before you. Pathway 1, pathway 2, and pathway 3. Which one do you pick?
I am going to roll a dice to determine which door I take.
Do it.
So 1 or 2 will be door 1, 3 or 4, door 2, 5 and 6, door 3. That's a 6. I'll be taking door 3.
Door 3. Okay. Jeremy Cobb, you walk into this tunnel just behind Caldwell Tanner, who sets off confidently towards room number 3 when there's a cave-in. You can no longer go down this path. You have door 1 and 2 available. Which door do you pick?
In the spirit of chaos, I will roll a d4. 1 to 2 is door 1. 3 to 4 is door 2. That's a 3. I'm going door 2.
Okay, here we go. So
I knock on the wall to see if Jeremy can hear me.
Jeremy can hear you.
I tap I love you in Morse code. just to try and be as encouraging as possible.
Back, right. I tap back. Wow, that's a lot of information to take in right now. Maybe we should talk about this some other time.
I tap back. Oh, no, I ruined it. I said it too soon. I'm so sorry. I'm so psych. You fell for it. I got you.
All in Morse code.
I tap back ... and just leave it at that.
Okay, so what we'll do is we will always go from the easiest question to the hardest question. So starting off, behind door two, Jeremy with the easy question. Now, I should say the category for this particular game of Luck of the Halflings is early NADPOD. It's very specifically exactly where I'm up to in NADPOD because I didn't want to give myself any spoilers. And plus, I thought it would be fun because, you know, you guys probably, you were in it a while ago, Caldwell, and you listened to it a while ago, Jeremy. So this should be a fun thing.
So long ago.
So, Jeremy, for 1 point, what is the name of the town where the Band of Boobs first met?
Immediately like, oh boy. All right. Glade Home.
Unfortunately not. I'll give you another guess. In fact, this is the easy question and there's no rules to this game. So I'm going to give you a clue. The first part of it shares its name with someone else in the party.
It's a good clue.
All right. I'm going to say Moonville.
So close. I'll give you half a point. It's Moonstone.
It's so long.
I wish we had gone to Moonville. That sounds great. Moonville. Honestly, it sounds great. Like a 24-hour diner, and I want to go there.
pitch it to Murph for campaign two.
Yeah. Moonville.
We go to Moonville. I order an omelet.
It's shaped like a moon and contains actual moon dust. It's the special thing about this restaurant.
What do I get? What's my reward?
Okay, Jeremy, you get half a point. Congratulations.
Yay.
Moving on to the medium question, which Caldwell got. What is the name of the shaman that is responsible for sending the animals of Moonstone crazy? And there is a multiple choice available here if you would like it.
Oh, goodness. All right. I thought you were talking about another shaman, but the one that makes the animals go crazy. It's that orc shaman.
It's the orc shaman,
that was sitting on the edge of the pier.
Mm-hmm. You just stealth past, just fully like, stealth past. I'm sure that won't be a problem later.
This is a tough one. Oh my gosh. He's like part of the Cracktooth clan. I'm trying to remember what their name was. I might need a hint.
Okay, cool. Here is your three multiple choice options. There is Goresh Hot Axe, Kruk Lightning Sword, or Lund Cold Spear.
I believe it's Lund Cold Spear.
It is indeed Lund Cold Spear. Congratulations. Yes.
I remembered a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Well done.
So you got the most points by half in the first round, Caldwell. So please select a door for question number two.
There's more doors in here?
This is just a maze of doors.
Wow. Oh my goodness. This is the best spelunking tour I've ever been on.
If you want to find out who won this game of Luck of the Halflings, you can go over to patreon.com/TBHalflings and subscribe to listen to this and future episodes of Luck of the Halflings, along with a bunch of other goodies. So what are you waiting for? patreon.com/TBHalflings. But for now... So thank you so much for playing, guys. That was an absolute blast. Thanks.
That was very fun.
That was very fun. That is all for this week's episode. I hope that you have enjoyed. And thank you so much, Caldwell Tanner. Please tell us, where can we find your stuffs on the internets?
Oh, of course. Well, first and foremost, nadpod.com or Not Another D&D Podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Please listen. It's been great. I will give a quick shout out to the crew, as well as Lou Wilson, who did a guest role recently on the show while I was away for paternity. And it was just an absolutely fantastic, super funny arc.
Amen.
So definitely check that out. We're doing campaign two now, and it's been a lot of fun. I'm on Twitter, at Caldy, I guess, is the other big thing. And let's see. And I guess I'll give a shout out to Hunter x Hunter, which is an anime I've been watching. So just if you like anime, check that show out.
Amazing. I do actually need new anime. So that's, yeah, great.
It's very fun. It's a real comfy kind of like, it's a comfy good boy show, which is how we've been describing it. So it's nice to have some good boy shows.
Nice.
But yeah, those are my plugs. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
No, don't be silly.
And also awesome an assault of my memory. So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming. This has been cool.
This has been really, really cool. Thank you all of you who are listening and enjoying the show. If you want to find more of us, then you can share us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at TB Halflings. We have our Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings. And I don't forget to check out The Cub and the Caterpillar, which is our actual play show, which released twice a month. I think that's everything.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, have a really lovely day, and we'll see you very soon. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Farewell.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.